accession number 20134, reel 2.
Frank Claxton, reel 1. reel 2.
Yeah.
You were telling me that most of the time you were in Scapa.
Yeah.
What was that like?
Well, there was nothing there. It's just a load of islands and all the fleet there. And I think you were allowed ashore when it was your watch ashore, which was every fourth day for about 2 hours in the afternoon, to a canteen on the island of Flotta, which the Navy had built a bear canteen. And you were allowed 2 pints of beer. There was no population on the island at all. And all there was this canteen that the Navy had built. And all the ships that were in Scapa Flow, all the people who were allowed ashore on that particular day were allowed 2 pints of beer. And that was that. There was nothing else. Unless you were, and if you were lucky enough to put into, say, Glasgow or anywhere, or Greenock, you were allowed ashore then. And then that was the usual thing. Everybody went ashore straight into the nearest pub and downed as many points as they could and back to the ship again. And if we were in Edinburgh, it was Rosyth, we'd go up to Edinburgh and things like that. And but there wasn't a lot of shore leave. And then I think the shore leave was unfair because the ratings only got about 4 hours shore leave. And the petty officers were allowed 6 hours leave. And the officers were allowed all night leave and all that sort of thing. I don't think that was fairly distributed.
How did the Marines get on with the sailors?
All right. My day, sir. There was always the rivalry. There's always the domestic workforces, there's always rivalry. I mean, say, even the Navy, there's the rivalry between the stokers and the seamen between the torpedo men and all that sort of thing. And there was always rivalry. We'd be going together. We used to have dart teams. The Marines used to play the stokers at darts and all that sort of thing. And Ockers, Ludo, and that sort of thing.
What's Ockers?
Ockers is Ludo. That's what they call it in the Navy.
Can you tell me about sailing to the Far East, please?
Yes, we left England in August 1941. And I think we went over the convoy and took it to Freetown. And then we finished up in Durban in South Africa. And when we got into Durban, that was like heaven on earth. They never knew a war was on. No blackouts or anything. No rationing. We pulled in Durban Dockyard and half the population of Durban was there to greet us. And you walked out the dockyard gate and people were there with their cars, took you out, big eats, steak, eggs and chips and everything. Had a wonderful time. We were there for a few days and I always remember General Smuts, who was Prime Minister of South Africa at the time, coming aboard the ship. And I was one of the Guard of Honour for him on the ship. And we had quite a nice time there. And then we went to sea and done some exercises or something. And then we came back to Durban again for a second time. Everything was lovely. Then we left there and went there to Colombo, Trincomalee, where we all shipped. There was a big oil depot there for the Far Eastern Fleet. We were there for a few days. And then we eventually made our way down, joined up with the the Prince of Wales, and then of course in the meantime, that was getting near the time of around the beginning of December, and we'd heard rumours about Japan and all that sort of thing. And we eventually arrived in Singapore about a week before the war was declared. We rode with the Prince of Wales, but the Prince of Wales got all the glory, all the photography, all the news is all about the Prince of Wales. Nothing about the Repulse. The Prince of Wales, because she had an admiral on board, she came alongside the wall in the dockyard, and all the Prince of Wales people were allowed ashore. We were stuck out in the what do they call it, the sound, stuck out, anchored out, and we never got shore leave. That's all Prince of Wales. Well, then I remember, I think that was the 7th of December. There was an air raid warning in Singapore. And the following day we up anchored and away we went out with the Prince of Wales. And a couple of days later we were at the bottom of the ocean.
Was there any Japanese attack at Singapore that you remember?
After we got sunk, when we got back in Singapore, we had plenty of action there. We were getting bombed every day, two or three times a day.
Can you tell me about how the ship sailed from Singapore when it got sunk, please? What you remember of that?
Well, we were... it was just like an ordinary, 4 hours on watch, 4 hours off. And we were kept informed that the Japanese had landed at the top of Malaya, had come up in boots and had a sea landing, and we were going up there to destroy the landing crafts and that sort of thing. Well, of course, what happened in between, I don't know. I was just doing my 4 hours on duty and 4 hours off, and that was that. And then on the 10th of December, I'd just come off duty at 8 o'clock in the morning, and I was back on again at 12, and I was on my 4 hours off. I was detailed off to go right aft the back of the ship into the midshipman's chest flat, where the midshipmen, they had chest of drawers to keep their clothing in. They never had cabins because there had been some thieving going on. And they sent me down there to be a sentry. Well, then at about 11 o'clock in that morning, aircraft action stations went off on the bugle. And I was in... Now, aircraft, being in the 15-inch turret, that didn't really affect me. That was the anti-aircraft personnel, you see. But I was in two minds. I said to myself, well, now... should I go to my action stations, or should I remain where I am? Because I've been detailed off as a sentry to watch the midshipman's flat. So I had to make a decision, because directly action stations, the watertight doors are all shut, and the midshipman's flat was on the same deck as the officer's mess, then the marine's mess, then the stoker's mess. That was all on one deck. And in between each thing was watertight doors. Well, they had to be shut. And I always remember a petty officer coming down to shut the watertight doors. And he said to me, are you staying there or are you coming through? And I had to make a decision. Am I going to stay locked in this midshipman's chest flat, or have I got to go to my 15-inch gun, although I haven't been called to my 15-inch gun? So I said, right, I'll go through. So I went through the midshipman's flat, through the officer's flat, through the marine's flat, through the stoker's flat, and in the stoker's flat, there's a ladder that went up to the recreation space, and just as I was halfway up that ladder, a bomb came straight through the stoker's mess deck with the Japanese planes had bombed the ship, and the bomb went straight through. I never got up them steps quicker in all my blooming life. I got to the top in the wreck space, and I got to my gun. Now, if I'd have stayed where I was in the midshipman chest flat, I'd have gone down with the ship because I couldn't have got out.
Then what?
Well, I got to my gun, and then after the high level, the first attack on the Repulse was a high level bombing attack, which where they scored one hit. As I said, I just got through the Marine's mess deck, the Stoker's mess deck, gun like that, when I came through like the Marine, in between the Marine's mess deck and the Stoker's mess deck. I goes to my gun. And then the general alarm sounded off, everybody, action stations, everybody, you know, everything was closed up for action. Well, then the torpedo bombers started to come. And the first attack, because being 15-inch guns, aircraft, we couldn't fire at aircraft. You can't fire a shell when a ton of aircraft. That was air cat guns, you see, the 4-inch and the... machine guns and all the kind of guns and all the small arms, you see. And I said to myself, well, I'm pretty safe inside a turret with about 10 inches of armour around me. So the first attack of aircraft, torpedo bombers, I think was beaten off. And then they had a second attack. You see, I didn't see a lot of it because I was in the turret, but then we got hit by a torpedo and the ship simply shook, vibrating. And on top of our turret, we had an Oerlikon gun on top of the turret. There's a bloke up there firing this gun. We went out and onto the upper deck, and there was all these aircraft flying around and shells flying here, there, a complete chaos. And then there was another sustained attack, and we got hit about four or five times in a matter of a minute by torpedoes. And the ship just more or less just shuddered, and the captain up on the bridge had abandoned ship. And the ship, if that's a ship, the ship was going over like that to port. And I was, if that's about, I was about there, forward of the ship. And the ship was at an angle like that. But you go over that side so you can walk down the side of the ship.
To the starboard side.
You go to the starboard side. I was there, and the ship gave a lurch, and I went straight down the port side into the water. And just like I got in the water, I looked up and I could see all the superstructure above me coming down. And I just shut my eyes and I swam and swam and swam as quick as I could. And it seems as if I was swimming for blooming ages and ages and ages, and I doesn't look back. And every minute I was expecting to get dragged underneath, because I was very far forward when I went into the water. I eventually plucked up courage and looked up, and when I looked up, the ship was 100 yards ahead of me. I said to myself, I must have been Johnny Weissmuller swimming like that. But it wasn't, the ship was still moving. I was swimming away from the ship, but the ship was also moving away from me, because we'd been doing about 20 knots when I got hit, you see, and the momentum of the ship going through the water, it was still travelling. And that's what saved me. And then I tread water, and I watched the ship completely turn over. Then it turned up like that and dived straight down into the water like that.
By the stern? By the stern? Did it go?
Wait a minute, let's see. Yeah, now bow first, stern down. That's a ship. It went over like that, then it tipped like that. So the stern was on the top. You can see the propellers. Right? That's right.
Were you a good swimmer?
Average. I could swim, and I did have a life belt, a blow up life belt.
How did you feel about when you saw the ship going down?
I can't really tell, but all I was concerned about was my life. That was every man for himself. There was people in the water everywhere. There was wreckage and oil and dead fish where the bombs are exploding and all that sort of thing. And oil, and you just tread water. And because there was three destroyers with us beside the Prince of Wales, and you just waited until you got picked up.
How long did you have to wait for?
I was about 4 or 5 hours in the water.
Was it easy to keep afloat?
Well, fairly, because I had a lifeboat and there was plenty of wreckage in the water. But then that fear came in your mind, sharks and things like that. And there was all the oil on the water and dead fishing, you know, people were going to go panicky and that sort of thing. And people were clinging to any bits of wreckage, you know, old Carly floats and any wreckage that was there. And, you know, you were shouting to each other and you were gradually getting into groups. And then when then a destroyer would come up and the nets over the side and haul you in. And that was
Did you see any sharks?
No, I never saw any sharks, no.
Did you feel that you might not get rescued?
Well, seeing the destroyers there, I felt that we would get picked up. But then there was always that element of doubt, because when I was in the water, I watched the Prince of Wales get sunk. And I said to myself, well, is it the turn of the destroyers now? Are they going to get sunk? But fortunately, they didn't. The destroyers didn't get sunk. And they got picked up as a destroyer and eventually got back to Singapore.
What did you see of the sinking of the Prince of Wales?
I know that half of the people on the Prince of Wales never got their feet wet. They put a destroyer alongside her, didn't they? And because she was put out of action early on, and they knew she was more or less doomed. So they just left her and concentrated on us until they finished us off. Then they came back and finished off the Prince of Wales. She was several hours before she sunk.
What did it look like when the Prince of Wales went down?
Well, I don't really remember. Don't know.
Which destroyer picked you up?
It's the Electra.
How did you get aboard the destroyer?
They threw nets over the side, you know, and you clambered up the nets.
What condition were you in by the time you
exhausted? You just laid on the deck because you were all covered in oil and that sort of thing, and you just had to look after yourself, because the crew of the ship were at action station itself. They were manning their guns and everything. We were actually in the way of them. Some of the people who were more or less all right, who weren't in, there was a lot of injured picked up, you see, that sort of thing, and they had medical people look after them off the destroyer. And a lot of our men who were picked up were helping like that and helping doing everything they could, but we just had to, you know, make ourselves as useful as we could. You're soaking wet, covered in oil.
Any other experiences you had in the Electra?
No, I mean, all we were praying for was for it to get dark. Because what we knew, once it got dark, the attack would cease. And I remember that when it got dark, about 6 o'clock or 7 o'clock in the evening, and the ship immediately was recalled back to Singapore. And before it got dark, there was an alarm on the ship aircraft. We thought that was the Japanese coming back again, but it wasn't the Japanese. That was a lone Area Buffalo for Singapore, and that was the only British plane we saw.
What happened once you disembarked at Singapore?
And that was we got to Singapore, and the first thing he'd done was give us a tartar rum. And then he said, because we come into the naval dockyard, and we went in, they shoved us in the barracks and just get some sleep. And then the next morning we were out on parade and muster and all that sort of thing, and all details and the usual went on, issued with clothing and that sort of thing. And within 2 or 3 days, you wouldn't have thought anything had happened. We were just part of the blooming HMS Sultan in Singapore.
What kind of duties did you have in Sultan?
Just outside Singapore, there was a battle headquarters. That was an emergency battle headquarters in the middle of the jungle, with duplicates of everything from the headquarters of Singapore. That was duplicated in this place about near the causeway. And I was detailed over a century on this place. There was nothing in there, only all duplicates. There was no staff or anything working it. That was just an emergency in case the one in Singapore got damaged or bombed. It was 4 hours on, 4 hours off. Guard on this thing. Out in the blooming jungle. Weird, eerie mosquitoes. Creepy crawlies.
Did you see anything whilst you were on sentry duty?
No, not anything I shouldn't.
Did this go on for very long?
This went for about a month. And then, of course, the Japs were advancing down to Singapore. And being Marines, we were trained to fight on land, so things got a bit serious and they started evacuating. Well, of course, the first ones they evacuated was the civilians. Well, the civilians, the dockyard employers who were civilians and all that sort of thing, they'd been out there for 4 or 5 years. They never knew what war was. They'd had a lovely life, waited on hand and foot, servants, good pay, no rationing, no nothing. As soon as the war hit them in Singapore, they all wanted to go home. We'd had for a couple of years of war against the Germans, come out of Singapore, get sunk, and we had to stay. And that was the same as half the people in HMS Sultan. They'd been out there on a 2.5 year commission. They never knew what war was. They'd had a life of luxury out in HMS Sultan and that sort of thing in the Far Eastern station. As soon as the war started, they say, I've done my 2.5 years out in the Far East. It's time we went home. They were the ones who got sent home, and the poor sailors off the Repulse of the Prince of Wales had to take their places because we were only just out there. Yeah, that was very unfair, that was. Because they evacuated a lot of civilians, and then the Argonne and Southern Highlanders, who were a Scots regiment, they fought all the way down Malaya. They really got shot up. And they got back to Singapore, and I was there. There's about 150 of them left out of the battalion. And there was about 100 Marines off the two ships that had survived. So they joined us up with the Argonne and Southerners. Southern Highlanders in an army barracks as a unit. And when the Japs actually landed on Singapore Island itself, they said, as long as you Marines are survivors and the Argyles that have been shot up and are survivors, your section is a part of Singapore that's impassable. Cranji Creek, I think they call it. There's a swamp, so they can't get through. And that was a bloody place they landed, wasn't it?
Where you were?
Pardon?
Where you were?
I was there, yeah, where we were, yeah. That's where the Japs actually landed. And I'd never been so scared in all my life. Behind us was Australian artillery. And in front of us was Japanese artillery. And both lots of artillery were firing each other. And we were in the middle. There were shells going over this way and shells going over that way. And we were in the middle, and I'd never been so scared in all my blooming life. You could hear them, you could see them. And they were going over there, there. And terrifying. And that was raining, and, you know, sultry heat and that sort of thing. And no organisation. You never knew where you were. I don't think at the time we were up there, I don't think I had a proper blooming meal. You just scrounged what you could get. There was absolute chaos. Nobody knew what they were doing. Everybody was lost. I mean, you were in more or less like jungle, and you had no communications, you had no radios. All I had was a rifle and 50 rounds of ammunition. I never knew where I was. I had no... there was so much chaos that... Well, all you could do was just retreat and try to find somewhere where there was a little bit of organisation. You'd lost your unit. That was absolute chaos. You were in more danger from your own troops than when you were from the Japanese. Because as you were retreating, there was all these Sikhs and that sort of thing, and foreign troops, so they were trigger happy. They were just firing at anything they saw moving. You were in more danger from them than you were the Japs. There was absolutely no organisation at all. Oh, well, I suppose all the officers were in raffles, weren't they? Were having a gin and tonic, weren't they? Singapore is a fortress that can't fall. It's a 15-inch gun there, pointed to sea instead of land. They were expecting an invasion by sea, not from land. So the jungles of Malaya were impassable. No one could get through. No, but the Japs got through, didn't they? See, the half the trouble was, you couldn't tell a Jap from a Chinese, could you? The Japs just infiltrate behind you. And they'd be on bicycles, that sort of thing. You see, you didn't know if he was a Malayan, if he was a Chinese or anything. Can you tell them between a Chinese and a Jap? They weren't in uniform, weren't in uniform. They were just infiltrating behind your lines all the while. You found yourself cut off and retreat all the while.
Did you fire your weapon yourself?
Yes, I fired my weapon, yeah. But whether I hit anybody, I don't know.
Did you see a target to fire at?
Yes, I saw, which I thought was a target, which I thought was Japanese.
Do you remember the names of any of the people you were with at this time?
No. There was about four or five of us to start with. Just in a trench, in a little slit trench. And there was a headquarters in another place, and, you know, and half a dozen there, and half a dozen there, half a dozen there. And there was so much blooming chaos that you looked around and for your mates, and there was no one there. They'd gone. There'd been someone had said, right, bugger off back to a certain position. There was no, absolutely no organisation at all.
Do you remember who was in charge of you?
The officer in charge of us was Captain Lang, the Marine officer. But he was at somewhere back at the headquarters.